Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another frightening Halloween edition of the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, joined as always by the demonic-looking Josh Rutledge. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I wore a hat to cover my horns. Yeah. I didn't want to offend anybody. So
I noticed that this time. At least they grew in.
Yeah, well, they actually like pop up and down. They're like rabbit ears in that way. So, yeah.
That's right. And for those of you tuning into our YouTube channel, you know that if you're not tuning into YouTube, you can see this on YouTube. You can see all of our fresh faces, as well as our guests, our good friend, author and demonologist, M.R. Gorga. Back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing awesome. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And just a reminder, you guys could go to youtube.com/fearscapemedia and check out this episode and see things instead of simply hearing things.
Look for activities that may be happening in the background. Who knows? You know, stuff moves.
Who knows? MR, we had you on once before. We loved having you. We wanted to have you back. We love the book Demons Among Us. Awesome. Just how have you been since the last time we spoke with you?
I've been great. I mean, the book is really taken off. It's went to number one bestseller on Amazon.
And, nice.
And just been doing, you know, shows. And,
yeah.
You know, so I've been pretty, pretty busy ever since.
Yeah. Get the word out there about the demons.
That's right. That's what I'm trying to do. Yes.
I know. Who'd think you'd be the best marketing guy for them?
So, yeah. You know, when we had you on last time, you know, we talked a lot about the stories that are in the book. Your favorite kind of accounts that you're captured in the book, and I don't really want to get into we can of course pull from stuff in the book, but what I really want to talk about tonight is the actual demon part of the book, right? So when we talk about demons, what do you classify a demon as?
Well, I classify a demon as a fallen angel. So this is a highly intellectual, a highly manipulative, superiorly malevolent fallen angel. So these are supernatural angels. They've been kicked out of heaven, or they have been expelled out of heaven. And the earth and the cosmos is their home. They're not in hell. They are here, and they operate and function in the world around us.
Right. So that idea of hell, the lake of fire, that's supposed to happen after the fact, not before.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah. And there's a big misconception that the devil's in hell and he's ruling with a pitchfork and pits of fire. That couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, he's not going to be reigning anything. That hell was created for rebellious spirits, both human and unhuman, and so that hell is actually going to be a jail sentence for these supernatural beings and rebellious spirits, and that's going to take place Probably next week. No, I don't know when it's going to take place, but it's like,
you mean you're not one of those guys that knows the date and the hour of the apocalypse?
No, I don't. No, I don't know the date and the hour. But it is written, and it will happen. So it will come to pass, and that, you know. So basically, it's a jail sentence, and you know, jail's not fun. It's not going to be fun for the fallen angels as well.
Now, I mean, obviously that being that kind of stance or depiction of a demon is very Christian centric. And, you know, Stefan and I grew up in the Christian faith, but there are also different accounts for negative entities that could be classified as demons. And those negative entities, they exist outside of the Christian faith as well. So I think that a lot of people look at demonology as being strictly a Christian practice or Christian following, but I think there's an opportunity there for really to lump in a lot of other things that just want to prey on and lower your frequency and just really make your life miserable as potentially being demonic in nature as well.
Well, I mean, okay, so yes, it's a many level question. Okay, so yes, it's predominantly a Christian theme, or a Hebrew theme, you know, right. Because there was the demonic things happening in the, you know, Old Testament or Old Covenant in ancient Israel. And there are other religions, and each religion has their own version of a demon. Now it's, you know, okay, so let me just put this out there. Demons are not Christian,
right?
Demons are not Hindu. Demons are not you know, any other. Demons exist outside religion,
right?
God is not a religion,
right?
God is a spirit,
right?
Okay, so they didn't, you know, they didn't say, oh well, we're going to become we're going to become Christian demons, or we're going to be, you know, this. But they, you know, they don't have religion, and the reason why they go after real followers of Jesus Christ is because they pose a threat to their kingdom and their causes, and so real followers of Christ were really, you know, full play, you know, working this thing out with the Lord, or really kind of following Jesus. You know, not just mentally, but actually wholeheartedly. You know, these people have a target on their backs. Now, when we get into like negative energies and things of that nature, I never look at it as negative energy. I always look at these things, you know, you see these things on, you know, Ghost Hunters, and there's like, oh, this is a negative thing and a negative spirit or a dark energy. Well, it is my belief that these negative forces and dark entities and things of that nature, these are also demonic. It is my belief that ghosts are basically demons in masquerade.
Interesting. Yeah, and you think about that too. You think of they're not just Christian things. That's just what Christians called them. Whereas we have things like the jinn, we have some of the ancient gods of the Middle East. I immediately think of Beelzebub and Baal and things like that, right. That had these opportunities to show themselves as other things, which, you know, they're tricksters. That's
right.
Well, they're more than that. I mean, yeah, they are, but you know, it's not like, you know, they're just sitting around like waiting to like trip you as you walk by kind of trickster.
Right.
they're highly manipulative. They're highly skilled in manipulating and arguing, able to draw you over to their cause through an argument. They're very, very, very smart. Very cunning is the word, I guess, and highly, highly deceptive. They are able to think more superiorly than you and I, and so, you know, everyone likes to think that they wouldn't be deceived, or, you know, be able to be manipulated, but that couldn't be further from the truth, because every one of us are.
Yeah, I guess my big question is why would they be allowed to wreak havoc after they fell?
Well, they want nothing good for you. First of all, according to the Bible, the devil comes to steal, to kill, and destroy. That's his mission, is to steal joy, steal faith, steal your life. You know, kill and destroy faith. Ultimately, kill you, kill an individual. Right? Why would they be allowed to do it? Is a whole other question. And why? But why they do it? Is because they have a basically an eternal jealousy for mankind. They lost their home. They lost their presence in the presence of God. They lost this eternal sensation of euphoria. They lost their roles. They've lost their functions. They lost their home. All in this rebellion that they decided to try to overtake the throne of God.
Right. See, I'd be mad at Lucifer for being the one that like set it up. Be like,
That's why. Okay, so that brings me to the point, like how highly influential and manipulative he really was.
Right.
Now it says he drew a third of the angels to his cause. Right. Now think about, like, I don't know how many gabillions of angels there are.
Right.
But one third is a lot.
Yeah.
Well, they were probably all the ones that have like 13 eyes and 18 wings and 24 beaks. Like all the pretty ones, they stayed in heaven. But,
you know. All the pretty ones stayed in heaven.
Well, Lucifer was. He was the most beautiful creation God ever created. Next to Josh, Lucifer was the most beautiful.
They just put a target on my back. I'm now the fairest of them all.
Yeah. I mean, but this is a good show to talk about this on because it's, you know, Halloween and in the season of high spooks and high strangeness, right? Mm-hmm. And so to dispel a common myth, you know, Hollywood would love us to believe that demons are these hairy, grotesque monsters with horns and gravelly, growly voices. Mm-hmm. But in fact, the opposite is true. The Bible says that Satan or Lucifer was the most beautiful creation God or creature or angel God had ever created. He had the highest ranking order. In fact, the angels still recognize his authority, and they won't speak against his authority. That's how much authority he had, right? And he was the covering cherub, it says. And that means not, you know, when I say cherub, I don't mean a baby with wings.
Right.
I mean the most powerful, one of the most powerful angelic beings in all of heaven. He was the guardian of God's throne, right? And so he was able to walk in the midst of God, in the presence of God, where, you know, the presence of God is like electricity. You know, most would be incinerated if they even like looked upon God.
Oh, I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. I know.
Right. Okay. So in essence, so that times a million, right?
And right.
So, and so the Bible talks about his physical appearance, and it says that his body or his form was created of diamond, beryl, ruby, sapphire, onyx, gold, you know, all these shimmering jewels. I don't know what fashion that looked like, but he was this shimmering, glorious thing, just emitting light with every movement, right? And not only that, it talks about, you know, pipes and timbrels were within his form, meaning these were musical instruments. And so when he moved, he was this shining, brilliant, dazzling light display emitting music. In fact, it's thought that he was the music minister, or the basically the choir leader of all of heaven.
Right.
Right. So all of heaven sang the devil's songs. And so when you think about it, so it's like, it not only did he did he orchestrate and play music, he was music. And so when he moved, it was glittering. There was orchestrations coming out of his form, and so when these other angels were, you know, in his presence or whatever, it was he was called a light bearer because he was just emitting these shards of light wherever he moved. And so, and then when we talk about you know, what he looked like, this thing was a dazzling spectacle. In fact, he was heaven's rock star. So this is a far cry from what they would have us believe what a demon looks like.
Well, and we did, so two things. So Thirst Falls, you know, I think that the song that he probably played a lot was dun, 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 dun. Sorry.
I think it was Master of Puppets.
Yeah.
And then we did an episode, almost 3 years ago, one of our earlier episodes when I was joining the pod, talking about a lot of the, it was dubbed Monsters of the Bible, but it's a lot of the creatures that are found mentioned throughout the Bible. We actually did a big section talking about all the different types of angels that are mentioned in the Bible that,
yes,
like you say, they're not, you know, demons are often depicted as being a certain way, but angels are also depicted usually as being, you know, winged people.
Yeah.
But there are a bunch of different types of angels, and so it would make sense that depending on the type or the way you were in angelic form, that's the way you would be in demon form, because you would, yes, just be basically, now instead of serving the good of others, now you're going to,
right, seek out. I mean, are you going to be easier manipulated by a beautiful something or other, or by a scary monster creature? Like,
exactly.
Most of where we get evil demons just comes from bad marketing from the ancient church when they were trying to, you know, get over the Celts and the things like that. They took their gods and turned them into demons. Pan is another, you know, Pan is a big one, or Cernunnos, or things like that, the horned god that they said, oh, these people are not giving up their gods, let's make them demons. They would either make them demons or make them saints, one or right, the other.
Yeah.
So, and that's, and where think, we get that idea of the animalistic demons.
Yeah, and I think that the art needed a way to kind of portray evil. I think, yep, that, you know, and that's why you see like halos over holy people. You know, you have to, you know, symbolize something, yep, you know, to differentiate, okay, this is an evil creature, and you can't do that with a very beautiful thing.
Right, we went, right, from beautiful wings to bat wings.
Right, exactly. And you know, one other thing is that they, you know, they lost their home. They didn't lose their authority. They did not lose their powers. They did not lose their cunning. They did not lose their form. They are still the same angel they were, except they've been expelled.
Right.
And that's, you know.
And now they want you to, you, the individual, people, human, whatever, to do bad things, so that you can join them one day.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and you know, in the dark realm, or the, you know, the demonic realm, needs people to work through. So it's not like they're just doing it all themselves. They actually work through the influence, their influences, or their principles work through people. And that's how they get the cause. And many people don't know this, because it's, you know, it's unknowing or unwillingly living under the principles of Satan. And you don't have to worship a statue of Baphomet, or, you know, light candles in a pentagram or whatever, or go to the satanic church to worship Satan. All you need to do is be out of the governments or the principles of God to be under the governments or principles of Satan.
So, you know, we've talked a little bit, you know, I think about 20 minutes here, talking about kind of what a demon is,
yeah,
and what it is not.
Yes.
So I'm going to go back to a little bit of something Stefan asked, and I don't know if you have any insight here, but, you know, kind of along those lines, I guess, why are they allowed to, do you know, I mean, you may not know, but why are they allowed to rain down on people and do what they will upon humanity?
Okay, this is an elaborate answer. Well, the short answer is because they are trying to get back at God through his creation, right? So there is that. So in order to hurt the heart of God, he does it through perverting the creation and destroying, perverting, twisting, you know, basically mutilating or mangling the creation that God has created. Now, why are they allowed to do this is the elaborate part. And that is basically, it comes down to the matter of choice. God had given both mankind and angels the freedom of choice, right? So the freedom to love, the freedom to hate. And you say your wife, or if you're married or have a girlfriend or whatever, you don't want her to be forced to love you, do you?
No.
No, you want her to be able to love you at her own choice, at her own, you know, and at her own, in her own way, right? And it's the same thing with God. He created mankind and angels to love and to be loved back. But if he didn't create that freedom of choice, that would mean that they're robots, just right, mindlessly loving. And so we, both angels and humans, have this freedom of choice to do evil or to do good. And God does not impede on that choice, even if it's heinous.
Interesting. Never heard it put like that before. And that always makes me think about possession, right? How do you feel about possession? You feel like that's a legit circumstance?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the extreme, though. It's like, you know, when you talk about demonic possession, what that is the invasion of one of these demon spirits or fallen angels into the body of a human being or of an individual. So that's possession. But before it gets to that point, possession is the extreme, but before it gets to that point, there's numerous stages you get to before you're, you know, full on possessed.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually it's the form of allowing them in your life somehow. And that can be through occultic practices, whether that's, you know, palm reading or, you know, spiritists or, you know, fortune tellers and Ouija boards and tarot cards and all these other things. They act as these doorways for these entities to enter your life, and also through various sins. We have prolonged use of a certain sin. And I like to use the example of Judas in the Bible. And we know who Judas is. Judas mm-hmm. is the one of the disciples, one of the 12, that ended up betraying Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, which would have been the equivalent of $300 in today's money. And so he ended up betraying Jesus for money. And so now but he didn't start out that way. And so Judas was the treasurer, or he held the money box mm-hmm. for the ministry of Jesus. When they're traveling around, he was keeping money. Now Judas had an issue of greed, right? And so every so often he would take from the money bag. And so he was operating or functioning under this spirit of greed. And then finally, 3 years later, after, you know, prolonged use of, or, you know, operation in this sin, you know, under the influence of the spirit of greed. And so 3 years later, they're finally at the Last Supper, and they're in Jerusalem, and they're sitting at the table, and Jesus knows he's going to be betrayed and he's going to be crucified for the sins of mankind, for mine and for your sins. Mm-hmm. So he says, you know, I tell you, this night one of you will betray me. And they all say, oh, Master or Lord, is it I? Is it I? And basically he says, one who dips the bread into the bowl with me will be my betrayer. And that was Jesus. I mean, that was Judas.
Woo! Jesus got himself.
That was Judas. So he names Judas as his betrayer. And then he says to him, what you do quickly.
Yeah, do what you got to do.
And then the Bible says, then Satan entered him. Mm. So we see that I use this example because it's this prolonged operation of greed, where Satan finally took the opportunity to invade his life at that moment. And I believe he was working under it. Now, it wasn't possession of like, but it was, right. it was still the devil moving into his form to make him betray the Son of God. Yeah. And this miracle, supernatural miracle worker. And, you know, and so I use that example as like, and there's many other avenues that, you know, aside from occultic practices where these entities can enter our lives and then they'll harass, oppress, and the final thing is possess.
Yeah, because as I say, you hear stories of even the most pious person sometimes gets attacked through possession as well. And that seems like the exact opposite of that, which is more of an offense, you know, like to mm-hmm. go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that is a big spit in the face of God.
I'd say at least. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why he does it. I mean, he does it because, you know, God doesn't stop it because of the freedom of choice and free will. And, you know, and he does it to, you know, get back and to stab at the heart of God. And, you know, because he's trying to get back at him through the creation.
I found it interesting, and I wonder if it has played a role over the times, but, you know, the Judas betrayed for silver, right? 30 pieces of silver.
That's right, yeah.
And silver is also detrimental to vampires and werewolves and a lot of other things that go bump in the night. And I wonder if there was a little bit of, you know, a play or a theme approach there.
There is, yeah, in a lot of lore, it all stems from the 30 pieces of silver. There's actually some old stories that use that the only things that can hurt vampires and werewolves are actual things made from those 30 pieces of silver.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never actually heard that. Yeah. But, pretty interesting.
Yep. It definitely stems from that. So I had a question about Nephilim. I want to talk about Nephilim. I love talking about Nephilim. But I assume the Nephilim were created by these fallen angels. And there's a lot of theory that's out there that some of the monsters and things that exist, some of the cryptids that are out there and things like that, are these Nephilim, and they are spawned from these demons. Do you have any thoughts or anything on Nephilim and kind of comparing them to cryptids of today? Or just like, especially some of those Native American creatures like the Wendigo and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's the Bible does talk about Nephilim. They were actual beings. In fact, it was the reason why that God had to send a flood to destroy the evil from the land, is because these beings were so evil. That's all they did, is they just spread evil. They were evil, and, you know, and they were. They were giants. Okay, so what Nephilim are, the Bible says, is that the sons of God came into the daughters of men, mm-hmm. right? Meaning that these angelic beings had sex with the women, and they had spawned the race of Nephilim, which were giants, and these giants were called the men of renown. So they were able to do these like great exploits, and they were, you know, and expert warriors and, you know, and things of that nature. In fact, Goliath was a giant. When you talk about the story of David and Goliath, mm-hmm. Goliath was a giant as well. Six fingers, six toes. And so they were at war with a race of giants. That's what that David and Goliath story was, is, you know, Israel was at war with a race of giants, which were these Nephilim. After the flood of, you know, because they mm-hmm. their spirit, so they just do it over again, right? So so these things are a half breed of fallen angel and mankind, right? And they, like I said, they spread evil to the point where God said, you know, enough, and he destroyed the world with a worldwide flood to eradicate this evil on the land. And and that's how they wiped out. Now, you know, of course, it doesn't totally like kill them off, because it's spirit, they're in bodily form, mm-hmm. right? And so these spirits can do this again.
Yeah, that's what, right? I was gonna say, I mean, is that right. Still something that happens? I mean, are they still out there creating Nephilim?
I think so, but I think it's, you know, I think it's done in different forms now. I think that they try to pervert DNA. I think that they try to, you know, in things of that nature. Now, are they capable of coming down and having sex with women again? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 100%. I haven't seen a giant myself, but
just Andre.
Just Andre, yeah. And but they were bigger than that, though.
Yeah,
that's the thing. They were bigger than it talks about, like, from like 9 to 13 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these beings were, you know, these I guess we'll call them people, or these Nephilim.
Yeah.
Right.
Sounds like Sasquatch to me.
Right.
Yeah. And now talking about the connection to like cryptids and everything, I don't think that they're Nephilim at all. I think that these beings, and the Bible talks about even the devil himself can transform himself into an angel of light, meaning that the most malevolent being can transform himself into the most ultimate looking good. He can appear as the Virgin Mary. He can appear as hell. He can appear as Jesus if he wanted to.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's how highly deceptive he is, right?
Boy.
And so
tells you that's how the Crusades probably started, right?
Maybe, yeah. But, and so, you know, since he has, and these creatures and these beings have this kind of power, it's no stretch of the imagination that they can transform themselves into these, you know, into these beings, into the Wendigo, into the to the Tommyknockers, into the, yeah,
the doppelgangers,
or aliens, or any form they want. They have the power to do it. And yeah. So that's what I think these things are.
It's interesting you bring up aliens, because, you know, when you were describing Lucifer, it sounded like a spaceship, right? I mean, it sounded like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, as well as Ezekiel's image of
yeah.
the angel as well. You know, like these,
yeah.
It's interesting. It makes you wonder how much of what we've seen is. And, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there that believe UFOs and aliens are indeed demons.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there, and it, you know, they're doing the same exact thing that the devil did from the beginning. He was promising knowledge, and then when you turn and these people say that they were abducted, or they're, you know, or they come to people, the first thing they talk about is offering knowledge, and or to obtain knowledge, or to, you know, or they're going to give them some knowledge if they do this specific
right.
thing, and it's usually something very heinous. And so you know, and so that's what they always do. They always offer some form of knowledge, and that's what they did back in the Garden of Eden. You will know good and evil, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so basically it was knowledge. They ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So the devil and aliens, or AKA aliens, they're always offering, it's the same MO.
Yeah. And then, you know, then there's the theory of Lilith, of course, as well. You know, the ancient myth of Adam's first wife. And then there are people that believe she's the queen of the vampires, of course.
Well, you gotta really read between the lines for that one.
Yeah.
The Bible makes no mention of that.
And no,
I think
that's
a very, very far stretch.
It's in the book of Adam and Eve, one of the apocryphal.
Oh, the ones that didn't make the Bible?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So are there, I wanted to real quick ask, have you had any encounters, either since writing the book, and putting it out there, or were there things that, you know, didn't make the cut, you couldn't get them into the book, but, you know, is there a version, or, you know, an episode 2 or version 2 of the book coming, or anything like that from a, you know, experience perspective?
Man, you're a masochist. You want me to go through demonic attacks. To
Yeah, sorry, it's Halloween time, man. It's what the people no, I want.
I get that question a lot. Is there going to be a Demons Among Us 2? And I'm like, man, I hope not.
Demons still among us.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh God, you know, that just means that I have to go through like all these more morbid, you know, attacks and strange encounters and everything.
Yeah.
So, but to answer the question, yeah, things still happen, of course. Mm-hmm. And one of the things was, and this was a really freaky one. And just to backtrack for a second, yeah, the main episodes or the scariest things that had happened to me made the book. And there's like countless minor attacks where it's just, mm-hmm. you know, wakings up in the middle of the night and being strangled by, you know, steely hands and, you know, and night things hags. Of that nature. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, things of that nature. And then, you know, evil whisperings and just, you know, all kinds of different things that they try to do, you know, in the night. And so that stuff kind of always happens. And but one of the episodes came when my father had passed away last May, and I was cleaning out his closet, and I came across an old sweater. You know, he just never got rid of anything, and yeah. So he had this old green faded sweater from like the 90s or something, and. And something he would never be wearing, you know. Out of it. And I also found a Miami Hurricanes T-shirt. So, and then, but I went. I say that to say because I went to bed that night, and then I felt something kind of like, you know, enter the room, and so I look up, and my father's standing there, he's wearing this green faded sweater. And he's holding the Miami Hurricanes T-shirt folded up. And I'm just looking at him. And I'm very suspicious straight from the get-go because right. He would not have been wearing that sweater. And so, and I'm like looking at him, just like very suspicious. And so he starts walking towards me. And puts his arms out, he comes in for a hug, and I'm laying down, so he comes in for this hug, and I'm like, and I'm not gonna hug him because this is, I really feel like the creep factor coming off of him.
Oh yeah.
Right. So he leans in for a hug and he hugs me, and when he pulls his head back, it's the face is burning, his face is burning away at the sides.
Oh.
Like cigarette paper. And what's left is like this skull with these yellow gleaming eyes, and they're like, you know, and it's the face is like etched with the sphere, and the eyes are like boring into me while it's right in front of my face. But the skull was funny because it wasn't just like a, you know, a white skull or anything like that. It was like, it was black. Yeah. And it had such deep dimension. It was like looking into space. And it was crazy looking, and it was just like trying to like looking at into me, trying to frighten me with all of its being, you know. It was like
yeah, and success.
Yeah, but you know, but I knew, I knew that it wasn't my father from the get go, right? And so I wasn't as it was. Don't get me wrong. It's freaky. And it would have scared the bejesus out of anybody, right? Yeah. But I knew that something was going on from the get-go. I wasn't as scared or as frightened as I would have been had I not had, you know, all these other incidences beforehand. So it's just like, oh, all right, man. You know, it's like, yeah, I knew, you know, I saw it coming. It's scary. It's a very scary episode, but I wasn't as scared as I would have been had I not been through the other experiences.
So you're a little desensitized a little bit because you know what's there.
Yeah, I always know it's him. I always know it's, you know, demonic, you know. Now, I did go through another experience with my father, and this is a profound thing that has eluded people for generations, and I don't know if it's the exact right name for it, but it's like after death phenomenon, like, or appearance after death phenomenon. I might be getting it wrong, but there was also an appearance that wasn't that, And this is something that has completely mystified people for a god since the dawn of time, because you hear it a lot that dead relatives appear to them mm-hmm. soon after the death.
Right.
Right. Well, that same thing happened to me. And my dad had a very, you know, a numerous things that could have, you know, taken his life, because he had a lot of problems, you know, heart problems and kidney problems and, you know, diabetes and all these things. So we didn't know exactly, you know, how he had passed away. And so my sister calls me one day and she says, "I saw Daddy last night." And then I said, "What?" And me being me, I'm thinking it's a demon.
Yeah, right.
I go straight to demon. I said, "Oh, okay." And I know she wasn't capable of handling me saying that, you know, Daddy was probably a demon. So I just said, "Okay, well, what happened?" And she goes, "Well, and Daddy came to me and he said he was pointing to his heart." And I'm convinced that it was a heart attack. I said, "Oh, all right, okay." And I didn't give it much thought. I'm like, okay, because, you know, I think a lot of the stuff is demonic, right?
Right.
And so, lo and behold, it was like a night or two later where I had this same appearance, and my father came to me. And it wasn't the same, you know, thing that I was talking about earlier. It was, he was radiant. He was full of life. He had color in his cheeks, and he looked like he was, you know, younger, and he was wearing a light blue, light sweater, which is weird. I'm looking at him, and I don't feel the sense of fear that I felt from the other incident, you know,
right.
the whole creepy thing coming off of him,
yeah.
Like that. It was like, there was a real sense of comfort and peace going on. I could see it in his face. And then he just looked at me and he pointed like right here.
So he did the same thing.
He did the same exact
wow.
thing. And I said, "Whoa," because I know the difference between like a, you know, a vision or a dream or an apparition, you know. And I was like, "Wow, okay, I think she's right."
Yeah.
So that was like a, you know, it was like a weird thing. And that's the kind of phenomenon that has eluded even the greatest theologians of all time, this after death phenomenon. And you know, even the greatest theologians struggle with it. And it was one guy, Increase Mather, who was the top minister at the time in the 1600s, 1670s, whatever, early, very, very early America. Mm-hmm. And in Massachusetts, and he was the minister in Boston, South Church, I think, I want to say. don't quote me on that, but he was the minister in Boston.
Right.
Okay. And so, and someone brought that to his attention, and I think it had happened to him as well. And his conclusion, being the greatest theologian of the day, was, well, if God wants to do that to bring comfort, then who am I to question God? And
yeah.
I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah.
Because why does it happen? I don't know. Why did he allow it? I don't know. The answer is, he's God. If he wants to send a loved one back after, you know, shortly after death, you know, to convey some kind of message, he could do that because he's God.
Right. So something I was thinking about was the personal risk that I would assume you take by exposing this. You know, I mean, do you feel like since your book came out and things like that you've gotten attacked more or had more experiences where they've come after you more? Because that's exactly my first thought.
Yeah, I feel like a punching bag.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, listen, nothing is smooth. Nothing is, you know, for me, I see other people's lives and it's just like, you know, this is going great. And this is happening here. And I'm like, where is that? Like, where's the smooth sailing? So, yeah, I think there's something, you know, to do with that. You know, it's just, you know, there's, I have smooth days, but I don't have, most of the time it just feels like an uphill battle, to be honest.
You don't feel like that, your experiences that you've had have had an uptick since the publishing of the book, or they're pretty much still on par for what you've had in your life?
I think it happens in different ways, though. Like I talk about, you know, it happens, you know, they need people to move through as well. So along with some of the, you know, those nighttime attacks and those creepy mm-hmm. encounters, you also encounter these spirits operating in and through people, and knowingly or unknowingly, and they're just under the operation or the principle,
right,
governed by the principle or the principalities of these dark forces. So they're under that government because they're not under the government of God. And so they just naturally function in this satanic kingdom unknowingly. And these people are basically, you know, make life miserable for people and for me. And I have that, you know, in my life as well, where I got people just trying to, you know, they just want to make your life miserable. and so that's it. They're put in your path to harass, hinder, frustrate, and you know, and try to advance. Try to stop your advancement in what I'm doing.
Yeah, I'd be worried too. I mean, and I don't want to make you worry about this if you don't, but like that idea that they could come after your loved ones too, you know, as another way to hurt you. That's a scary.
Or they could use my loved ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that would be even scarier. I think about that. Have you ever seen that movie Fallen? With Denzel Washington and John Goodman.
I think it's been a while though.
Yeah, he's a detective, and the demon Azazel is a big part of it. But
oh right, yeah. That's
and
right.
he can go to anybody simply by touch. And so he messes with Denzel Washington by simply just walking and touching someone and continuing to sing a song and things like that, and just that mental abuse. Like
yeah.
But that's a true thing, though, because you can transmit through touch. That's why the Bible talks about, like, not to lay hands on anybody, you know, hastily, you know, and in prayer, because you don't know what spirit somebody is of, and they're going to allow them to touch you and transmit something spiritually that you know, that could be, you know, something that's not ungodly that they're you know, transmitting. That's why I don't allow anybody to touch me in prayer.
So what about, so my no, that's okay. I didn't mean to cut you off, Josh, but I was thinking about, like, what advice would you give to folks that maybe fearing that they're experiencing something? You know, movies tell us that it has to be a priest and a certain particular priest that's, and only from the Catholic faith and things like that. What advice do you give to someone who feels like that they are being attacked demonically?
Yeah, the movies have done a fine bang up job on making people believe that it can only be handled by Catholics and holy water and crucifixes, but that just makes for great visuals in a movie, right? But they do use that for the rites of exorcism, that according to their understanding. Now, I have a whole other understanding. And my understanding is that for the followers and believers who follow Jesus, Jesus has given people and mankind an unbelievable supernatural power. And then he says, I give you the power or the authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and all over all the power of the enemy. And the devil is our enemy. And so all we need to do when these things happen is we drive them out with the name of Jesus Christ. And all you have to do is mention his name and these things flee. I've seen them kind of like disappear like mist, you know, or just pass through a wall, like, you know. And so he's given this, you know, this unearthly supernatural power to expel supernatural beings that are so far superior to men. and mankind, that it's an uncanny that we would be entrusted with such a thing, right?
Yeah,
with such a heavenly power, right? So he has given us this heavenly power. And so for the believers and the follower of Jesus, we have this power because he's given it to us. He's promised us. And what we need to do is we need to exercise that. Now, if you're not a follower or believer, I would admonish you and even beg you to accept Jesus Christ, be saved. The time is short. But not only will you have this supernatural power to expel demonic powers and to resist them, but it says, my peace I give to you, not like the world gives, or not like smoking, drinking, doing whatever it is, not like any of that stuff, entertainment, my peace I give to you, right? And so he's talking about, again, this heavenly supernatural peace that satisfies the longing soul or the longing heart. And so he fills that void or that gap. So he's, that's my advice. My advice is to get saved.
Now, is there, you had talked about seeing them vanish. They flee. This is the video gamer in me, but is there a time limit to that? I mean, can you be repossessed? Can you be reattacked even, is there a time limit on that, you know, or is that completely up to the person who's being attacked?
Sure. I mean, yeah, of course, because you can have a demon driven out of your life, but you can also have them re-enter because you did not do what was needed to keep them out, right? And so, or from coming back. And so, and the Bible talks about that when a demon is cast out, it goes into dry and arid places, and seeking no refuge, it comes back seven times greater, or with seven others. And so it comes back more powerfully, and it comes back more stronger because you didn't do the spiritual work to kind of guard yourself against it. You just thought it was like, you know, okay, I'm good now. Just kind of go about your merry way. But yeah, no, you stand the chance of it. You know, if you don't do the work necessary of guarding your heart, guarding your life, exercising your authority that Jesus has given you, then you stand the chance of having these things come back seven times greater or more intensely than before. And let me just warn, just by, and you can't just use Jesus' name as like, you know, an incantation or like a lucky rabbit's
right.
foot. Because there's a story in the Bible where we know who the Apostle Paul is, right? He was the, mm-hmm. you know, he was the, he was basically a Sadducee or, a Pharisee. And, as knowledgeable as you can get in Judaism under the law, right? This man killed Christians, and he ended up seeing Jesus on the road, like in the form of like, you know, a white light, and he fell down, right? So he got converted, and he became one of the greatest disciples. He wrote most of the New Testament. Talk about being transformed, right? And so he was exercising devils, and some people saw them, and it was the sons of Sceva or Sceva, however you pronounce that. And they said they saw Paul exercising demons, so they thought like, well, we're going to exercise demons too, right? Mm-hmm. And so they go to exercise some devil out of somebody, and the devils say to him, or the spirit, whatever one it was, it says, Jesus I know, and Paul I know, but who are you?
Right.
And then they proceeded to tear them to shreds. They tore them out, you know, clawed them naked, you know, clawed the clothes off them, and just literally almost killed this guy to death, you know, ravaged this guy to death for trying to drive them out and under, you know, not under the authority to drive them out.
Right.
So just, you stand the chance of getting your ass kicked by devils if you do that.
Don't be that guy. This comes straight from MR Gorga. Mm-hmm. Don't be that guy.
You don't be that guy.
Oh, it's like, man. That's the new slogan for the New Jersey Devils, I think. Don't be that guy. Get your ass kicked by the devils.
That's right. That's right.
Well, man, we're getting towards the end of the show here. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to, before we head out of here, to kind of talk about your book, where they can find it. And for those that didn't listen to your first episode, just kind of a brief synopsis about what it's about and things like that.
Yes. Well, the book is called Demons Among Us, Shocking Real Life Stories from the Paranormal. It is an Amazon number one bestseller, and you can find that on Amazon. You can get it in Kindle and in print versions. It will be available on other platforms hopefully soon. And you can get it right now. I have it on sale for the Kindle version at just $1.99.
Oh, wow. Definitely get that, guys, because it's good.
Yeah. And so very affordable. I'm going to run that special through Halloween. So you better, you need to, if you want to get a hold of it, jump on it, because it's not going to stay around forever at that price. And you can find me on Instagram at m.r.gorga and on Facebook at mrgorga.
It is, so the book is demanding, right?
Demanding? Oh, get out of here. He's possessed right now.
He is.
He's possessed by a non-funny entity.
Get behind me, Satan.
Get thee behind me, Josh Rutledge. That's what I'm saying. Well, thank you, MR, man. Always a pleasure to have you come on.
Thank you.
You know, and we don't always have to have you on during spooky season, of course. But it's just more fun to do so. But we always appreciate your time and your expertise and the help that you're doing for people out there, man. It takes a lot of work. And proud to know you, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, anytime. So Josh, I guess we got to get out of here now. So
yep,
you're ready to go, aren't you? You're ready to go put crucifixes up on your walls in your bedroom?
Yo, I need to return the vase of holy water I just purchased off of Amazon.
Amazon? You should have got the book on Kindle instead. Oh, man. But just a reminder, everybody, we're here on the UnX Network every Wednesday night, as well as the Fearscape Media Network. You can check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/Fearscape Media, or just go to theconvergenceenigma.com. There you can find all of our wondrous, magical stuff where Josh and I talk about all sorts of different convergences and all the wonderful guests. Who's our guest we got coming on the next show?
Craig, I'm going to pronounce his last name incorrectly. Campobasso. He's written a couple books, the Alien Almanac and 50 Places to Go UFO Hotspots Before You Die, something along those lines. And he's going to come on and talk to us about Valiant Thor.
Ooh, gotta love Valiant Thor, man. But be looking forward to that. Happy Halloween, everybody. And I guess we'll get out of here, Josh. Just thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. This has been Stefan. Just a reminder, keep your eyes on the skies.
This has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, keep questioning, keep searching. Good night, everybody.
Good night.